Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another All Japan Excite series. And as ever, I'm here with Stephen Graham. Stephen, where have you been, buddy?
Oh man, so busy. It's ridiculous. Like, as you noticed, there hasn't been a Pro Wrestling Super Show, so I think since the last Excite series either. So, yeah. What about you? Where have you been?
Well, I've been quite busy as well. I mean, I've basically written
about Ric Flair.
I've basically written a book. I've produced a four-part mini-series on Ric Flair. I've started back to the school term. I've been on three different trips. I've done a lot of things since the last All Japan Excite. But we're about 4 months behind at this point now, Stephen, is that right?
Well, this first show we're recording was supposed to come out in July. So,
but we're trying to make up for lost time now. But Jesus Christ, I'm not doing this again. Because this footage felt like it would never end.
And before we get to the footage, though,
yeah,
any Canadians out there, happy Thanksgiving weekend. So enjoy your Mondays. I got my tofurkey ready, so it's going to be a good time. All right, go back to what you were talking about, Parf.
What do Canadians have to be thankful for, Stephen?
The last harvest of the season.
Great. Okay. All right. So shall we get into the first? Let's get into the first match here. It's we're going to 7/28/94. It's our man Misawa taking on Dr. Death Steve Williams. Misawa, of course, is the Triple Crown champion going into this one. Any notes going into this before the first part's point?
No, it's been a long couple year reign by Misawa. So he's kind of the established champ. We've seen Williams getting built up, in the Carnival Finals and Kawada and a couple other big wins. So I'm curious to see what we think of this.
All right. Well, let's go into the first Parv's Point.
Parv's Point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
So, the first point, Stephen, is this. Has anyone improved as much as Doc did from 92 to 94? The only guy I can think of is Rick Rude from 88 to 89, or possibly even Misawa himself from 89 to 90. Any other candidates? Sorry to put you on the spot, but...
Doug Summers in, like, from whatever until 86.
Doug Summers, I guess, if you want to put it that way, yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I was really on the spot. But, yeah, man, insane. He was horrible that we saw. Well, okay, he wasn't horrible before the now. It's just he was working a style we didn't like very much.
Maybe Lex Luger from 87 to 89 might be another guy I'd put in there. Bret Hart maybe at some point in his career.
It was a gradual... I think with Brett.
Okay.
Maybe like 91 to 92.
That's right.
It's just when he went from tag team to singles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay. So my second point, and this is a rather general one, is this is a very exciting match with great high spots and near falls. Very exciting. Misawa, being completely knocked out after the backdrop suplex and laying outside was great. Discuss.
I really love when in All Japan, it really started to come up on this footage a lot more, whenever they get hit by a big move and they roll to the floor so they can't be pinned. Like, that's such clever psychology. And we really see it in some other matches, but it was here going on. And yeah, that Death Suplex was just
he was out, wasn't he, Misawa here?
Probably. It was insane.
And then my third point is pretty much just, wow, a loss for Misawa. Even though Williams is the bigger man, this has to be a bit of an upset. And Misawa put him over clean as a whistle, too. Did you have any other points on this match? I thought it was pretty exciting. You know, the near falls were great and so on, but I didn't have any kind of granular notes on what went on.
It was just Williams kind of being this unstoppable monster, and Misawa being the veteran and trying to counter as much as he could, which was really cool in that finishing stretch. Normally when, because there was like Tiger Driver, Frog Splash, Senton, Frog Splash, Death Suplex, Stampede, all these were like two counts before the final Death Suplex gets the win. And it was one of those matches where it's a crazy amount of kickouts and near falls, but it doesn't feel like it's, current WWE.
Finisher spam.
Yeah. It didn't feel like that, did it?
No, not to me, no. I just felt like it kind of was exciting and built organically and so on. I gave it 4.5 stars. Where did you go on it?
I was debating between that rating and what I settled upon, which was 4.75.
Wow, that's a really high rating for it.
Yeah, the whole match built so well for me, and then that finishing stretch is like, there's very few finishing stretches that were that kind of compelling and exciting. That was just crazy stuff, and I also give extra points for the insane crowd. The huge moment of Misawa losing and Williams winning the title after he's been built so well. So all those things kind of factor in. But yeah, I thought this was an amazing match.
Okay. All right. Well, you're higher on it than me. And I've got a funny feeling, Stephen, that's going to be one of the themes of this particular show. not to put too many spoilers on the next match review here. So we're taking a three, four, five month jump now to January the 1995, is that right? Yes.
January 19th.
And at some point during those 5 months, Williams would lose the Triple Crown to Kawada. And Kawada goes into this next match as the Triple Crown champion. He's taking on Kobashi, and this is 1995. And I think I have those details right. Kawada is the champion here.
Yep.
Do you have any notes before the first part's point?
I actually do. now that you mentioned it, I do have notes. So back in the day, like 97, 98, when I started to get tapes, All Japan tapes, I got like 5, 6, 7 tapes. For some reason, this was one of the tapes I got with this match.
Did it just have this match on it?
Yeah. It was, $20 just this match. That was what happened at the time. And so I remember watching this with one of my childhood friends. And so I have kind of a little nostalgia for this. And then when I went to rewatch this a little while ago, I forget his name. Because I can't pronounce it, but on The Greatest Wrestler Ever, he's doing those live watches.
Oh, Sai OM.
Yeah, Sai OM. So I jumped on one of those, and I'm like, I have to watch this match. Can you put it on? So I kind of watched it in a group setting, too.
Well, I watched it alone, Stephen, with fucking matchsticks in my eyelids. Anyway, I don't want to preempt. This match goes long. Basically, it goes an hour, right?
Yeah.
And let me get into my first Pav's point.
Pav's point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool. Such a
pity. I found a lot of the early Test of Strength stuff pretty dull. The first 15 minutes really felt like they were eating up time. I'm not a big fan of those old school collar and elbow tie-up spots. I mean, I've seen enough of them. I've watched more Dory Funk Jr. matches than most people, and that's pretty much a go-to, especially for Dory and Jack. I'm not sure if it's the right match. For these two to be having in 1995. I'm also not sure if they actually do that Test of Strength stuff that well. Again, using a Jack Briscoe as my point of comparison, for example. That said, I did like the transition with Kawada's baseball slide into working the leg. That was pretty cool. But then it led to like another really dull like 15 minutes of just kind of meandering work on the leg. So I wasn't a fan of that first 15 minute segment. What were your thoughts on that first 15 minutes? Or were you just like chatting in your little
No, I was that Colorado tie up had us all not marking out like crazy. Like that was intense. That was awesome. I love the Colorado elbow tie up. I'm having trouble with that, but really liked it. And then I thought the leg work was great because we've seen Kobashi kind of get his leg worked on. It seems to be a theme throughout his matches. So kind of playing off the other stuff, any leg work seemed to work really well because we've seen his leg be damaged in the past. So I was all in at the start here for sure.
Yeah, and I did have a little look at the old comments on PWO, and it seems like I'm maybe lower on a lot of people that on the early part of this match. Because my second part of the point is simply this. Honestly, I didn't think much of the first 30 minutes of the match at all. I didn't think it was very compelling until Kobashi started working on Kawada's leg. I just want to talk about the stuff before this. You know, JDW, one of the posters on the board and a long-time person in the fandom, talks about stuff to do. He usually talks about stuff to do with reference to Ric Flair as a criticism. But I really felt that most of the first 30 minutes here felt like stuff to do until we got this struggle over the figure four. And even then, I felt like things felt like they were drifting a little bit. And obviously, Steve and I spent quite a lot of... I've been thinking about the greatest wrestler ever and Flair a lot recently. And I've got to be honest, he was a lot better at working hour-long matches than this. You know, he worked them at a faster pace. He kept them... consistently entertaining. Around 35 minutes in, I really don't think that these guys feel like they have quite what it takes to work a match like this at the very, very top end. And I say that after having watched many hour-long Broadways over the past couple of years. So that was my particular take on things, although it seems like a lot of people disagree with that.
Well, I think... you know, there is something to that. But if you look at Flair, you look at Briscoe, Dory Funk, these guys have worked how many singles hour-long draws? Kawada and Kobashi have almost no experience doing this. They do it in tag teams quite a bit, but singles, this is a new territory for them.
And I'm just not sure if it's the right... if it's the right match for these guys. Like, it doesn't really play to what these... I think these guys would be better working a 25-30 minute match where they can get in a lot of their high-end stuff, where they don't have to rinse and repeat quite so often as they did here, where they don't start looking like they're losing ideas. I just don't think it plays to the strengths of these guys. I'm happy for people to... disagree with that because I know that some people do really like this match, and Steve, you might be one of them, but I was not particularly thrilled with the first 35-40 minutes of this.
So on that, I'm generally not a fan of draws, so like I think I prefer most people in 22 minute matches. I prefer Flair in 22 minute matches. I can't think of too many people I want to see work an hour. I think there was enough compelling stuff into this that I really got into it. I'm not going to say it's a 5-star classic or anything like that. But I was really into this. And I think one of my favorite spots, and this is, I think, the only thing I remember from when I watched this, like, 20 years ago in high school, was the section where Kawada was draped over the guardrail and Kobashi was dropping leg drops on his head.
Yeah.
Like, that moment stuck with me since 97, 98. So that's a pretty cool moment that obviously worked really well in a match there that I can remember that. But I thought there was enough going on in this that I wasn't bored out of my skull or anything.
Don't get me wrong, it's not like, and I've seen more boring. Like, this wasn't like watching, and I'll just be honest, 1950s hour-long draws I feel like I want to die sometimes when I'm watching that stuff. And I've said it before, because you know I'm not big on the old mat work, as I've told you many times.
Yeah.
Something else has to go on to make me, you know, literally if they're just laying there for 40 minutes straight, it's like, come on, Vern, do something else. Do you know what I mean?
And this one was a struggle.
And this one had struggle, and this one, it's not like it was bad, but I mean, I've been thinking recently about, like, you know, Flair versus Steamboat Clash 6, which is a match that goes almost as long as this, that it's worked like a sprint. Now, it's probably unfair to compare, because that's obviously one of the greatest matches of all time.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking in terms of, like, these two guys must know each other really well. These two must have wrestled each other almost as many times as Steamboat and Flair, like, by this point, by 1995. Like, they must know each other really well. Kobashi and Kawada.
Yeah.
They must have a certain amount of chemistry and understanding, but it's like I don't know, it's just interesting that they weren't quite able to pull off a match like this.
Well, I think this goes down to experience. Like, Flair's done a million hour-long draws at that point. Steamboat and Flair have done a bunch of hour-long draws themselves at that point.
Yeah.
So I think it's just that comes down with something that they're experienced with, as opposed to these guys not really having the experience with it.
No, one thing I'm wondering about is, why do you think Barber was starting to ask them to do these hour-long matches? Like, I'm just wondering what brought this on in January 1995, that they started doing these. Because we hadn't had any for a while, right? I think the longest match that we'd seen was that six-man, about 45 minutes.
Well, according to legend, and this is by JDW, is that this was Kawada was expected to just defend the title here against Kobashi, get the pinfall victory. Mm-hmm. 2 days before this match, there was a huge earthquake, and Baba changed this to a draw to do something special.
Right. Okay. Right. Oh, okay. So, well, and that is another mitigating, because maybe they weren't, you know, that's quite a sudden shift to then suddenly be like, oh, Christ, we have to go an hour. Especially if they're not used to it, you know?
Yeah. So I give them that. But do you have more points at the end?
I have two more. One is actually not to do with the match. It's to do with the commentary. Now, was it just me, or was something off with this match? Because the commentators, I think it is Giant Barbo and some... It wasn't our regular screaming guy, right?
Oh.
They seemed so bored. And it just made me realize how important the usual screaming, insane announcer is. Because he brings a lot of excitement to things, right? With all the near falls and things. And these guys, like, literally, they could have been, like, dropping backdrops on people's heads and things. And the commentator's like, yeah. He just didn't care at all. He must have been, like, a Japanese, like, I don't know, Bob Coddle or something. I don't know what the deal was with him, but he really wasn't bothered. And he actually commentated on a few of these matches that we're going to be looking at. So I'm wondering whether our screaming dude is being phased out at this point, because he's not on all of the matches, which is a shame.
To be honest, I think I watched some of these at a lower volume at, like, late at night or with whatever, and I think I missed some that kind of stuff, so didn't affect me.
Yeah, and then, I mean, if I haven't been down on this enough, Stephen, my last point is that the match felt like it petered out rather than built. I was pretty disappointed with this all round, to be honest. I mean, we've touched on some of the other things I have to say here. They felt like they're out of ideas, better suited for going 30 minutes. I've just said I think it's interesting when you compare this to some of the NWA champs or Jumbo or Giant Barber himself or Nick Bockwinkle, who could easily go an hour. And I just think it goes to the era that you said. It's just like, but for me, this is not the finest moment of Kawada or Kobashi. Still solid, but I did not think it was anything great. The one thing I did enjoy was seeing Kawada's increasing sense of desperation. Now, that almost did have shades of Ric Flair in it. That was like kind of, you know, the champion is holding on here. And it was just quite cool to see Kawada do a little bit of that. So,
yeah, I really liked the Kobashi kind of rolling away at a desperation to get away from moves at the end. And, you know, I the last couple minutes, it didn't look like they were working towards a draw. I don't know. It did, I guess, kind of peter out at the end. But I think the overall struggle, Kobashi kind of desperately hanging on, and Kawada, you know, being a little bit of a dick there near the end. I was, you know, 4.5 on this. I thought it was really good. If you want to really get some thoughts on this, in the thread on Pro Wrestling Only, Charles has like a 20-30 paragraph section on this match where he really breaks it down really well. So you can check that out.
Yeah, I did have a little look at that. Well, I was a lot lower on that. I gave it 3.5.
Wow.
Which is, you know, like what I think it probably deserves all in. Not really going to be making my pantheon of Broadways, to be honest. like, don't get me wrong, I didn't think the work was bad or anything. I don't know. It didn't seem to build in the manner that you'd want a match like this to. Just not sure if it works well with the style. So.
Oh yeah, me. The moment I turned it off, I wrote down 4.75, but I dropped it down.
Wow. Okay. Well,
I was really high at the end.
You were really high on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know who would be closer to me and who would be closer to Steven. Look, the sense from PWO is that more people are closer to that rating, Steven, than to mine. There we are. And as if that match wasn't long enough, we followed it up with another one, which went an hour.
Oh, gosh.
Now, first of all, before we get into this, what is the meaning of this? Why was I made to watch 2 hours?
I didn't actually... When I made this list, there was no... I didn't know the results, anything about them, except for looking at people's star ratings, and I just put them together. Funny that you say that. If you look through the thread on Personally Only, there's a bunch of people complaining about having to watch 2-hour-long draws so close together. So you're not the only one.
Yeah, and I actually, in the middle of this, I wrote in the Facebook chat to Steve, and I was like, this is never going to end. It's never going to end. I'm never going to reach the end of this footage for this show. So, I mean, I reckon this is actually one of the reasons it's taken us so long to get the show out, because it was just like, how are we ever going to reach the end of this footage? So anyway, this is...
Also, it helps if you watch the right footage in the right order.
Yeah, I did one of my PAV specials and watched like completely the wrong set of matches. I'm blaming you though, Stephen, for being so organized. Like, who has like the next show already planned out? Come on.
I have every show in our entire run planned out, so...
Yeah, but you already had the playlist there in the it doesn't matter.
Oh, sorry.
It doesn't matter.
Too efficient.
Yes. Well, I've never done that before. I've watched the wrong match before for certain shows, but like completely the wrong card, basically. Anyway, this is a tag match. It's Kawada and Tawai taking on Masaru and Kobashi. Classic lineup here. 1:24.95.
Yeah.
Any notes to go into this?
I actually didn't write down a single note during this match, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I've written here Bob's points.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
Such a pity. The offense is much more spirited. This is past point one, incidentally. Spirited is much, the offense is much more spirited in this one. Stiffer strikes, bigger kind of bombs in general. And maybe this is what resting on the apron can buy you. So, yeah, I just thought that they went at this a bit more.
Oh, yeah, this is way more spirited.
Yeah, and maybe that's because they knew that they could have a little chill out on the apron, whereas in the other match they knew they were going an hour, so they had to pace themselves a bit more. Whereas even if you're going an hour in a tag match, you can hang out a bit.
Oh, yeah, you can get your breath.
The second Pav's point here is that we've said on this show, Stephen, that Masao has hidden out in tags a bit before.
Not tonight.
But he brings a lot here. Brought a lot in this match, I thought. And it was mainly like they tended to pair off Misawa and Tawei and Kawada and Kobashi. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I was really I was fascinated by that. It looked like they switched dance partners for the first time, because it's always been Misawa, Kawada, and Kobashi Tawei. So it was fascinating to me. And it looked like, I guess this was part of the build towards a Tawei in the Champion Carnival, I would bet.
Absolutely. So yeah, it was just an interesting little shift in the whole dynamic. I thought Misawa brought his A game in terms of offense during the match. However, past point three, this was way, 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 way too long for what it is. Like, maybe 40 minutes too long. I felt like it was starting to lose steam after about the 30-minute mark. I mean, there's a certain art to building long matches. And I, for whatever reason, I just don't think these guys here in January 95 quite had whatever that is. So, I mean, my final rating, Stephen, was 3.5 again. Back to back, these are probably my two least favorite matches on the series so far.
Yeah.
Have I ever given a lower mark than 3.5?
I can't recall, but maybe I
gave something 3 stars once.
You gave some awesome Kawada jumbo match like 3 stars or something stupid when it was like a 4.5-star match, I remember. But I don't remember back-to-back matches like this. But yeah, I actually am on board with you on this. I had it 3.5. There was some fun stuff. There was some spirited stuff, but this is like the lesser of their tag matches that we've seen by far. And it was really long.
So January 95, not my favorite month of All Japan, it has to be said.
Yeah. This is a special show.
Yeah. Well, do you want to move on to the carnival?
Do we want to do one mega show or do we want to do 2 shows?
Let's just do it all, Stephen.
All right.
We'll just do one long. We'll come back with a bang.
All right. Do we want to take a break before we...
Yeah, sure. Let's have a break and listen to these great shows on...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard and the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought, leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast. Place to Be Nation podcast network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Elner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows, not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Yes, well, welcome back. You heard a lot of adverts for great shows there, and I think that may be the debut of adverts on All Japan Excited Series, Stephen.
Really?
Yeah, we don't usually play them because we only go an hour, so...
that's true.
But this is a special, like, extended edition, so I thought, you know, we'd throw some in.
Well, this is the... we're sorry we've taken so long to do a show special.
Yes, we're sorry, and now we're bringing the goods. We're bringing so many matches, an entire Champions Carnival for you people. But also, listen to my recent Fair for Flair series that was completed last night. All four parts now up. I think we had some really interesting discussions across all four of those shows. So. There we go.
And a lot of interesting discussions on the board.
And, oh, God, yeah. Yeah, the board. Yes.
Let's move on.
Yeah, we did our best to address as many of them as possible across the shows. Okay, so the next... So we're going into now to the Champions Carnival, and we're going to be following the fortunes of one Akira Taue. As he takes on each of the other pillars, right, in order. So he starts with Kobashi. This is 321.95. And do you have any kind of pre-Parv's Point notes here, Stephen?
No, my notes start whenever the match starts. So
okay. Parv's Point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool. Such a
pity. So, this is the first Parv's Point. There's a great sense of neither guy budging or and the other guy ratcheting up pressure and violence in a bid to gain supremacy in the first 15 minutes. And this gives this bout a certain intensity that had been lacking in their boring hour-long matches a couple of months back. I thought there was a real sense of even Stevens here, with each guy seeming to have so much to prove. And I thought that this made a lot of this stuff really compelling. It was also stiff as hell in this first 15 minutes. I really thought that this was interesting stuff in the early going. What did you make of it?
I loved this match from like the very like opening bell. I was all in on... from the very start, Kobashi just unloading with chops on the corner, and Taue just throwing him to the mat, like "fuck you, we're going tonight." And then you have Kobashi unloading the leg drops to the back of the neck, and later on the guardrail, like in that previous match. Like this match from the opening bell, I was all in here, and it was intense. There was that even Steven aspect, as you stated, but it was more of a. These two are ready to throw down, and they're ready to jump out because both of them have kind of been pushed down. Yeah. Like Misawa's, you know, Kobashi's upper guy, and Kawada's kind of Tawei's upper guy. But these two looked like they were ready to explode to be number one men themselves, and neither wanted to give up an inch on that.
Yeah, it was almost like, it's my time to shine now, and they were going to do anything possible to get it. I thought that was a really cool dynamic that you don't see very often in this match. The second point I've got is that there was very little actual strategy in this match. It was mainly charging and trying to hit the other guy as hard as possible, or deliver the biggest bomb possible. And this fed into that story that we were just talking about, of both guys having so much to prove that they left any sense of a game plan at the door, because it was just literally like, it doesn't. And I thought that was really fun, where it was just like, right, what am I going to do now? Charge!
Well, there's even a point where, like, Tawei goes for a spin kick and just completely whiffs, but they just keep going because, like, we're just throwing bombs. So whatever hits, hits. Whatever misses, misses. But I'm going full force. So, yeah, I love the story of this match, even if it's, you know, not your normal psychology. It's just in this instance, in this situation, it fit perfectly, I thought.
There was this sense of like all, it doesn't matter now, we're gonna just go for it, both guys are gonna go for it. My third point, and I'm coming up to the finish here, Stephen, so is there anything else you want to mention before I hit this third point?
Did you have about the choke slam to the floor?
Yes.
Okay, go for it.
Well, it's simply this. Tawei should have been arrested for attempted murder. Power bomb on the outside. Choke slam from the apron to the outside. Dynamic bomb. Death. That's all I've written here, because it was just like, it was like this had been ramping and ramping, and then in the last 5 minutes, Tawei just takes it to a ridiculous level and kills Kobashi. Just kills him with all of those massive bombs. So,
oh.
Yeah,
this finishing stretch. I talked about the other one being really, really good, but this might have been my favorite finishing stretch of all time. So you have the choke slam to the floor. Kobashi's on the floor shaking because he was hit so hard. It was like the greatest sell of any move I've ever seen in my life. He was just like, he looked like someone who was actually in a car accident. He was just shaking like horribly. And then they roll him in, and he barely gets the two. He deadlifts him into a chokeslam again, but he rolls to the floor, and then he friggin' powerbombs him on the floor, and they get back in. And then at this point, this might have been my favorite thing, Tawei slaps him, yeah. But he slaps him so hard he has to shake his hand because he hurt his hand. Like, he's just like, oh, fuck, that hurt. And then he chokeslam him again and picked him up and powerbombed him. Insane finish this match. Tawei just taking it to a whole new level of destruction. I was so happy at the end of this match. It was so great.
I love the camera angle on the powerbomb outside, because you couldn't actually see them land, so it just looks like Tawei throwing Kobashi like down a hole or something, because you don't actually see where he goes. I just thought visually that looked really cool.
And I think this is the first time in my notes I wrote shit with a bunch of exclamation marks, because I thought Kobashi was dead from that choke slam. But yeah, and that slap that we talked about, oh my god, I love this match. This match so much. I want to rewatch it again now, actually.
This was a really interesting match. I thought Tawei was brilliant. Now, can I bother you for a star rating, Stephen?
Can you go first?
What are you gonna moderate based on my?
No, I'm gonna give what I want to give, but I don't. I want to go second.
Okay, well, I gave it 4.5, which is my standard rating for insane bouts of this nature. So there we go.
I went 4.75. I was so happy with this match.
I thought you might like
this. I love this match so much.
It is really fun. I enjoyed it a lot. I guess I couldn't go higher than 4.5, just because, I mean, this is basically just a massive bomb fest.
This kind of reminded me of that Kawada Hansen match we loved a lot.
Yeah, it did have something. It did have something of that, and it did have a cool story. And a genuine sense of, but like, I don't know, 4.5 is my rating for, like, I don't know, Steiner Brothers versus
versus Fujinami and Iizuka, you know. And this had like, I don't know. I don't know if it had
any. This had more substance than that.
I guess it did. I guess. I don't know. I'm going to stick with 4.5. I'm happy with that rating. Okay. But it's on the high end. It's if there is such a thing.
Would this make your top 100?
No.
No?
It wouldn't make my top 100.
All right. Didn't you have one of those Steiner's matches on that top 100, if I remember correctly?
I think it was like match number 100 or something, wasn't it? Match 19 or something. Maybe this could like threaten it, but by the time we get to the end of the show, you'll see there's no room for it. So, So,
fair enough. But yeah, this me and Tim or a few other people have talked about because Brad kind of insisted that other people do a top 100 match list.
Yeah.
So the plan is to do an end of the year special, and when we do that, expect this match to appear. No doubt about it.
Great. Okay. So you're gonna. I can't wait until to hear other people's top hundreds. Okay. So I'm going to move on now to the next match, which is also from the Champions Carnival. It's Misawa versus Kobashi. This is 3/26/95, and I think this was actually a match I watched like 2 weeks ago. I don't have many notes for it, so you might have to help me out. Bob's points.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool. Such a
pity. Note number one, the elbow discuss. That, I must have had a reason for writing that. why do you think I wrote the elbow discuss there?
I don't know. I watched this afternoon, and there was some really stiff shots. So it must have been one of these elbows, I guess, took you as really, really stiff, I guess. Cause
I just think Misawa hits it with such rapidity and regularity.
Oh, okay, I see. Not one particular elbow, but the elbow. But I got gotcha.
Misawa's elbow, yeah.
Okay, I got it. Like, what I find interesting about All Japan, well, one of the many things, but something I really like is that you have each person kind of has their thing. Like Misawa hits these elbows. Kobashi hits these chops. Kawada hits these kicks, right? Like they each kind of have their own little thing. And Misawa's use of the elbow in all these matches is really excellent. Like he changes it up. He does it through planches, he does it just normally standing, he spins sometimes. Misawa's elbow is amazing. Yeah.
And I only have one other point for this, so why don't you talk us through some of your notes?
There was a really great at the start, I always love this, when Kobashi just unloads with the chop fury in the corner.
Yeah.
So that was one thing that was really exciting to me. There was a sequence where Misawa and Kobashi were like going for planches and missing and then trading them back and forth kind of thing, which I thought was really cool. It was a very energetic match, I thought. But it seemed like a match where no one was really gaining the advantage. It was kind of like Misawa was – like Kobashi was still wrestling the way he did against Tawe a little bit. But Misawa is kind of more of a veteran. He was kind of just fending him off. And my final note was, what the fuck was this finish?
Can you remind us of it? Because I can't remember it.
Oh, it was just some crazy suplex, like just dropped him right on his head to like pure death. And then it might have been I think he put on like a choke sleeper and then suplexed him on his head. It was ridiculous.
Is it too early for us to start a head drop count on our shows? Because I might start that soon. Like how?
Oh, I think this is about the period when you would because it was definitely on display. I think the moment Dr. Death starts to
there were quite a lot of them that we've covered on this show so far. My second part point, and the only other one is Kobashi's German. That was his go-to equalizer time and again in this match, and I thought that was quite interesting that they all have their moves that are cut off, and Kobashi seemed to cut Misawa's momentum using the German suplex, which I thought was quite interesting. For me, this was a good match, but it never quite captivated me, and I think you may have had a similar feeling. Misawa just seemed too strong for Kobashi here, and the match went exactly as I'd expected to have gone. Good, but not great. Kobashi didn't feel enough of an underdog to tell that story, nor enough of an equal to tell that one. I mean, it was solid work, but I don't know. It was just kind
of... That seems about perfect.
Yeah, so I went 3.5.
Yeah, that feels like my thoughts exactly. Yeah, I went 4 because I think it was a little more spirited and exciting than you.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was not an... To me, it didn't feel like a match of the year, all-time great match, which a lot of people did. So maybe we're missing something. But I left a little cold on this one, but really good.
Okay. Well, moving swiftly on now. We did briefly watch a tag match between the Can-Ams and Kobashi and Kikuchi, Stephen. But we've decided that we're not going to... It doesn't warrant a review because it was only about 6 minutes long.
Yeah.
But I do want to read one PAS point from it.
Okay.
Kikuchi was put on this earth for one reason only: to face in peril. I quite like that. Okay, so Kira Taue now is taking on his longtime tag partner, Kawada. This is 4-8-95. And any kind of pre-match notes?
Oh, no, all my stuff was into the match, but I was just, at this point, I was kind of really amped for this, because after I watched the other Taue match, and we've seen him kind of, we know he goes towards the finals, and he's facing his longtime partner. We haven't seen them face in years, but when they were facing before, it was always great. So just, this was a match that had excitement going into me.
Bob's points.
Is that your best?
Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
Such a pity.
Well, my first pass point is simply this. It's like Taue woke up one day in 1995 and thought to himself, right, no more shit. I'm not going to take this anymore. I'm bigger than all of these guys and I'm going to make it count. And I think there's a real sense of that all the way through all of this tournament, really. That he's kind of like, what's gotten into you, Taue? All of a sudden, he's like this. I don't know. He's like, there's a real sense of him just being like, I am not going to take it anymore. No, do you know? And in fact, I might as well read the second point out because it's actually closely related. You know the Taue shove down?
Yeah, I love that.
I think that's a really great move that says, no, stop. That's enough. Do you know, that's the kind of sense I get from it, because he's done it, he did it against Kobashi, and he does it time and again against Kawada here, where, you know, he's unloading his kicks or his chops or whatever, and Taue just equalizes it with the shove down. So much fun.
Yeah, one thing I love about the shove down is that, like, it's really close to that chokeslam. It's like, if he wore you down just a little bit more, that could have been a chokeslam. That could have been over. So there's always kind of this danger there when he first grabs someone by the neck that, like, this could be a death chokeslam or this could be a shove down. What could it be? So that's kind of the thing I dig about that. But, yeah,
a lot of Taue's offense is kind of like that, isn't it? It's more,
it could be anything.
Shoved to the mat. There's a kind of scrappiness to how, in fact, like, this is going to sound bizarre to anybody listening, but kind of reminds me a little bit of World of Sport offense. Like, you see spots like that quite a lot in when you're watching British wrestling. You know, that those kind of, like, throws down. And yeah. I was wondering if it goes to, like, was Taue a sumo wrestler or something before he became a pro wrestler?
I believe he was.
Because
I
think some of those spots may go back to his sumo days. So there we go. While Stephen's checking that, I will read out my third and final point on this match, which is DDT on the concrete. chokeslam.
Was a sumo wrestler.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I thought I recognized some of his, because not only does he do that, he does the running forward with the palms.
Yeah,
you know, which I call the E Honda. you know, it's like the 100 hand slap, basically. Yeah. Like that's the sumo deal as well. So, yeah, it makes sense for Tawei to have moves like that shoved down in his arsenal, I think. So anyway, the third pass point, DDT on the concrete, choke slam from the apron. Tawei pulling up a lot of big offense in this tournament, and he's really giving Kawada some of it in this match. Did you pop for some of these spots, Stephen?
Oh yeah. I'm a big Tawei mark, as I guess we're seeing here. But he doesn't like. It's weird because he doesn't have like the prettiest joke slammer or the prettiest power bomb or anything like that.
He doesn't have the prettiest anything, Stephen.
Yeah, it's true. But I think it makes it feel a little more reckless and dangerous. Even though it looks like that choke slam off the apron is probably the safest choke slam off the apron that anyone could possibly do. He like picks you up with one arm and kind of guides you to the floor. It looks so devastating, but it's, you know, it's probably safer than getting body slammed on the floor the way he does it. But it looks so cool. I love it. So yeah, in the DDT, that was a new one on the floor. That was crazy. And we got more of that rolling away by Kawada. Like, when he got hit by a big move, and Kawada's like, I don't want to be pinned, so he like rolls to the floor. I always love that too. So yeah, Tawei's offense, awesome, loved it.
But wow, Tawei put Kawada away as well, and he used the same finisher, the dynamic bomb, I believe it's called. So I was always, you know, two kind of, I don't know if you'd call them upset victories, but they're two pretty big wins for Tawei in this tournament.
Yeah. Do you actually know, have you heard Kawada and Tawei's kind of nicknames?
No.
Okay. Well, so we have Dangerous K.
Dangerous K, okay.
And Dynamic T, hence the Dynamic Bomb.
Dangerous K and Dynamic T. They need to put more effort into those nicknames. who came up with them? Johnny Ace?
I don't know. I wonder if those are actually things that exist or if I made them up in my brain, like, 10 years ago, and I just thought they're true. I feel like they're true.
Okay.
They could be made up.
Let us know if they are real nicknames. So, like, Tawei's walking down the corridor. Hey, Dangerous K. Was that his name, Dangerous K?
Yeah. I think he had a t-shirt that said Dangerous K at one point.
Okay. That seems unbelievably lame to me, those nicknames. But there we go.
I thought you would like those. Tawei here. This is like really great tournament booking, right? Like Tawei's kind of on a rampage going through everyone.
Yeah, well, he's certainly got momentum on his side and you can see like a change in his character.
That happens in real sports tournaments. Like an underdog team just catches on fire at the right time and they become unstoppable.
Now, do you know, it actually weirdly reminded me of something that happened in WWE in the past couple of years. Do you remember that period where Big Show decided he's not going to take any shit anymore and that he's actually a giant and he's going to work like that from now on?
You know, you don't watch the WWE that frequently, but he does that like once every year or two.
Like
did that like a week ago, or like two weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know he turns face and heel every other week and so on. But he had that match with Sheamus, I want to say. Was it Sheamus? I think it was Sheamus.
Maybe Alberto Del Rio. I know he had a couple when he was a monster versus him.
But it's just like every once in a while, Big Show wakes up and is like, hold on, I'm a giant, I should kick ass.
Yeah, it's like he forgets. That he's bigger than everyone else, and yeah,
and it just kind of reminded, like, there was something about Tawei in this tournament that made me think, hold on, he's realized something here, because he, like, that shovedown spot, for example, relies on him being bigger and stronger than the other guy, and he's the biggest of the four guys, isn't he?
Yeah,
Kobashi's quite a big guy as well, actually.
Yeah, but he doesn't wrestle like a big guy, Kobashi.
Yeah, true. Anyway, I thought it was a good match, very good, but to me, it was not as compelling as that Kobashi match. There was really solid stuff. Now, I noticed in PWO reviews and things, some people were talking about this like a match of the year, kind of thought it was amazing. Honestly, I prefer the Kobashi bout, and I guess I'm just a bit lower on this stuff than some.
Yeah, maybe. I had this at 4.5, and I had the Kobashi one at 4.75, so I'm with you.
Well, I had this one at 4 stars, and the other one at 4.5, so I guess that makes sense, because you know I don't give the 4.25 rating, right?
So. I know, Barf.
So I don't know. I just wasn't seeing this all time. Like, didn't seem like a match of the year contender to me, this one.
Did you watch this one before the other Tawei match?
No, I watched it after it.
Okay,
I watched the Kobashi one first, and then this one. So I guess maybe I had a tough act to follow.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. I thought maybe the in context story would help it, but no. I
don't know. I just thought that I just loved that dynamic in that Kobashi match, to be honest.
Oh yeah, I love that match. It's one of my favorite matches ever now.
So anyway, our next one is April 13th, 1995. This is Kobashi versus Kawada. So have we had like every possible combination here? I think we have, haven't we? Apart from Misawa versus Kawada.
Yeah, We didn't get Misawa Kawada, but yeah, I'd have to look at it, but it looks about right.
I think we've had every single possible combination apart from Misawa Kawada. So.
Yeah.
Yes, any little notes before we get into the Kobashi Kawada?
Well, we just came off that epic hour-long draw watching that, so my expectations were high. And then when they started with the Colorado tie-up, and it was not like one half the intensity of the other one, I was disappointed, and I was not expecting much after that.
Okay. Well, I have said here, so this is Pav's point one.
Pav's point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
This feels more like a fight than the Misawa match. More stiff. Makes sense, though, of course, because Misawa and Kobashi are friends, whereas these two hate each other. So I'm comparing it to the Misawa versus Kobashi match that we talked about a little bit earlier on. And that makes sense, of course, because, I mean, even though they're not really heels and faces, there's more of a kind of heel versus face dynamic with these two than there is with Misawa and Kobashi, were clearly like fan favourites. So I was getting more hatred from these two, but you said you think that the early work lacked intensity, so I guess
we disagree. The Collar and Ella tie-up in the other match was epic, and this one, they weren't as heated as... It picked up later on, but yeah, we'll talk about it as we go along. But I didn't think the opening was quite as hot as the other opening.
So my second past point is that I loved it when the action went outside here. You know, big, meaty wrestling. I love it, I've written. Kobashi was superb selling the leg into the railing. Kawada focusing on the leg, really good psychology. Played into their history as well, of course, because, you know, they've injured each other's legs at different points. Kobashi focuses his comeback on the same leg with the Scorpion. Pretty good payback. However, I thought the symmetry is possibly a little bit too cheesy. A little bit too cute to have exactly the same spots on the payback, I thought.
Yeah, I guess. I never thought about it. But yeah, you have a good point there. But I did really like the outside work that you were talking about there. They went back to that leg drop on the guardrail, which I'm going to mention every time they do it because it's so great. One thing I liked earlier on when they Kobashi like countered something into that tiger suplex, which just looked devastating too. But yeah, all the work on the outside, really, really liked it. And then they headed toward a finishing sequence, which I assume you have a point about.
I actually don't, Stephen. My third point is was actually one I started mentioning before. Kobashi is a big guy, and this probably needs to be discussed more. He's massive. Look at the way he just dropped Kawada with that powerbomb. So,
oh yeah, that was devastating.
You can't really get that kind of leverage on a, like when Tenryu does the power bomb, for example, he does what I'd call like a little man power bomb, whereas Kobashi is almost big enough that he can almost do like a Sid Justice power bomb. You know, it's kind of like, it was pretty like Kawada fell a long way. So
yeah, yeah, it was like a jackknife, like Diesel used to do.
Yeah.
It felt like, but yeah, this match near the end, I think there might have been a little too many kickouts for me. Like, there was multiple moonsaults. Those power bombs were going back and forth. It feels like they hit each other with too much not to finish it off here, I felt.
So you, a little bit of that excess that people talk about creeping in, you think?
I felt like because they had to go 30 minutes, yeah, that some of these things maybe shouldn't have been in the match because they felt like they should have finished it. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a good, solid match. Lots of good action and storytelling. Like I said, I wasn't convinced about Kobashi working all of the same holds and stuff as Kawada in the entire payback sequence. Because, I mean, if you watch that sequence, it's literally like a mirror image. Kawada does the sequence on the leg. Kobashi then does exactly the same sequence. That seemed a bit much to me, and it brought it down a little bit. As well as that sense of it just being too much for the time they had. Maybe they could have drawn out the early going a bit more than they did. So yeah, I went 4 stars, Steven. I thought it was a good match. You know, some great meaty action, as I called it, but not like an all time classic or anything. Just a really great match.
Yeah, you're gonna like this. I had it 4.25. So
I'm consistently like when. At least a quarter of a half star.
Balloon. Well, if you had 4.25 ratings, I think you would have gave it to this.
Probably, yeah. Probably, yeah. That's a fair point. Okay, and we're heading into our final match now. And this is Misawa taking on Taue. This is April the 15th, 95. And is this the final of the carnival?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so any notes going into this one?
No. It's just what you would expect. You've had Misawa, who's the ace, taking on this Taue monster that's coming through this tournament, destroying everyone in their path, knocking everyone out with the power bomb, and it really pays off well in this match, I think. So, but we'll talk about that.
Bob's points.
Is that your best?
Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
Yeah, so I can get into my first point if you want, which is that Misawa's offense is really feisty here. He's like, it's almost like he's kind of come to take down this upstart. And it's almost like Misawa's saying, all right, enough now, Taue, you've had your fun, but I'm going to crush your dreams here, son. you've come up against the man, and he seemed to me to get the most out of any of the opponents in terms of offense during the so-called miracle run. They call it the miracle run, don't they, of Taue?
Yeah, I've heard that.
But Taue did get his shove down cut off time and again in this, but it's almost like Misawa sprung back up and was ready to roll again straight away type thing. So I thought that was quite a neat little dynamic here. Well, any thoughts?
Yeah, you hit a lot there. man, I don't even know how to comment on that. But yeah, this was exactly what you were just saying there. Taue and Misawa being the countering ace, kind of stepping up here to take on the Rising Bull. Yeah, exactly what you just said. I can't disagree with anything you just said there.
So my second point, very, very simple. Backdrop from the apron. Chokeslam from the apron. They're doing a lot of these apron spots, and they're all from Taue. There's always Taue doing the offense. He's like the apron bomb master.
I do like that the apron is a little bit lower than a lot of other rings. So, like WWF ring, it would be way higher than what this All Japan ring is. So the fact that they're doing this stuff off the apron, it looks like death, but it's not quite the death it would be. It's not like have you ever seen that great Suzuki Dos Caras match from Mishinoka Pro?
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay, so at one point there, Dos Caras hits a powerbomb on Suzuki from the apron to the floor, and it just it looks like the most devastating thing in the history of wrestling. And these look super devastating, and they're very dramatic, but because the apron's just a little bit lower, it doesn't look like complete death. Like in that match, I think Suzuki starts bleeding from the back of the head because it's so violent. So you don't need that here. I think the lower the ring kind of plays itself to doing a little bit more stuff off the apron.
I have to say, I hadn't really noticed that the ring was slightly lower. But
well, it's either slightly lower or Taue is the tallest man in the world.
No, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, you know, you must be. So they must not have the steps going up to the ring. I'll have to look out for that. Power point number three, very simple again. Glad to have the insane commentator back. He added a lot to this match, I thought. Did you have him on, Stephen?
Oh, yeah. He was in full force losing it during this. I'm not sure what else he was doing during this match, but he was into this. So always excited. That's why I kind of like something good about the Lucha announcers, too. Like, they're really into it. So it really helps when someone's excited watching the product along with you.
Yeah. And I hate their B announced team, which seems to be Giant Baba and some really boring guy. So if anybody knows who that commentator is, I hope he got sacked. Like the Japanese Bob Coddle, I'm calling him. Okay, so past point four. I loved the spot, Stephen, with Misawa barely getting to the rope break. I thought that was a really cool way to show off how much of this match that Taue had taken. Do you know the spot I'm on about?
Oh, yeah. And yeah, Misawa does such a job of making Taue look indestructible, but also playing that he's the ace. And like, this was just another good spot of looking like how close Taue got, but Misawa just still a little bit better and was able to get to the.
Misawa, did they have like a face injury or something coming to this? Because Taue seemed to be targeting his eye and his face, and there seemed to be like sustained attempts to get at his face during this match. Do you know anything about that? Had Misawa hurt his nose or something coming into this? Because
I don't know. I've read through a couple places and I haven't heard anything about it, but did that ever play into the Taue desperate will do anything, even rip at eyes like to win this tournament? Like, I think it just played really well into the story. I don't know if there's any injury. I think it was just Taue being super desperate to do anything to win.
Yeah. And my fifth point, and this is my final point, you'll be glad to know, is about Taue's resilience. I thought it was really something in this match. Kicking out of the Tiger Driver, kicking out of the Tiger Suplex, but then he couldn't kick out of the second one. And that surprised me a bit, because they built this in such a way that it seemed like Taue might be going over here. And then he didn't. So,
I was surprised by that too.
Yeah. I was expecting him to win. Weren't you?
I was, and... You know, for something that happened so many 20 years ago that we should probably know that he doesn't win. But I think it kind of, I think it works really well because, like, Kawada's never got a pinfall finish on Misawa. Why should Taue do it first, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. When he kicked out of when he kicked out of the Tiger Driver and then kicked out of the Tiger Suplex, I was like, right, Taue's winning this. And then he just didn't know the Tiger Suplex and put him away. Just an example of how, like, a false finish can be effective. Like, sometimes if you're reasonably sparing with it.
Yeah.
They didn't really do that many kickouts and things before that little finishing stretch there. So I thought it was really effective. And then when the match was over, Misawa looked so beaten up and bruised, like his face had been through hell and back. And I just written here, look at his eye. Like, yeah. His eye was like, was it completely bloodshot? It's almost like he needed an eye patch or something. Did you see it?
Yeah, it looked really bad. I don't know if he was injured coming in or if it was just a really physical match. Because you never know with these guys. Because it does, like, would you be surprised if Masao was like, okay, rip at my eye, throw whatever you need to. I don't give a shit what I look like coming out of it. Like, I wouldn't be surprised by that.
No, it seemed like they would just do anything that they needed to get things over. And they took it like, this was a great match, I thought. Great, great match. Do you want to hear my rating, Stephen? Or do you have more notes?
No, I'm curious if you it seems like a lot of people think this is the this is a 5-star classic. So I'm curious if you're on board with that.
I am, Stephen. I gave it the full 5. I thought it was a really good match. Really, really good. What about yourself?
I originally wrote 4.75. I think I'm gonna have to rewatch it before I give it 5 stars. I'm gonna stick with 4.75 for now. But my
sense is that you like that Taue Kobashi match more.
I feel like I do. So that's a problem for putting this at 5 stars. So I feel like I might try to find time to watch them both back to back and see what happens. But I feel like this one obviously has a better story. It has probably more depth. But there was just something about that other match that I love so much.
Yeah, now I'm starting to think that I might be the low guy on Kawada on these shows, because I'm noticing a little trend here, Stephen, that I consistently is slightly lower on these Kawada matches than other people are. I mean, here we saw Taue against all three of them, and I thought there was a clear Masawa's match was best, Kobashi's match was the second best, and Kawada's match was the third. I thought it was like not even. I don't want to say not even close, but I thought there wasn't much question about that.
I'll give you that. Like, I'm higher on Kawada than you, obviously. But, you know, I can give you those rankings for those matches.
But I was, like, really surprised to see, to go into the thread and see people talking up that Kawada match as a match of the year. I just didn't come away from it thinking that. I don't think anybody can say we didn't watch these matches in context, because we watched like a good, not the whole tournament, but a good chunk of the tournament. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, for sure. But yeah, I still, well, we get to do this now. It's the end of the show, right?
Yeah.
So
some awards and things.
Yeah. So what was your spot of the show?
Spot of the show. I think I have to go with the power bomb outside by Taue on Kobashi, where you can't actually see where Kobashi lands, and you just, it looks like he's just killed him, basically. that spot.
Yeah. I have to go with the choke slam where Kobashi sold by shaking like he was hit by a car. Like, I think
a really cool spot as well, yeah.
Not only the spot was cool, but the selling of the spot was so great. That one really stood out. But there was a lot of good stuff in this.
The selling of that particular spot goes to my Kobashi is like Rick Martel, you know, Steamboat style babyface.
Oh yeah,
that talking point, because those guys would sell it in that manner as well. I think.
Oh yeah,
he's very good at that kind of over the top selling.
Yeah, he's very, very dramatic. You know, it's good. Kawada is a lot more stoic, so you had quite the contrast between those two. What was your top match?
Well, it's got to be the Masawa Taue, 4.15.95, 5 stars.
Yeah, I think I have to say that too. But
Go with the Taue. Why didn't you go with your heart, Stephen? Go with your heart.
My heart.
Don't worry about what people say. It doesn't
my heart matter. Sings for Kobashi Taue. I feel like though, if I watch him again, that would flip flop. Like, I feel like this is a momentary high that will not be there the next day. You know, but my heart definitely is with Kobashi Taue. So.
And what other awards do we do?
We top four workers.
Oh, okay. Well, this is going to be interesting. So, descending order or ascending order? I would say that my top worker is pretty clear for this evening.
Tawei?
It's Tawei.
Yeah.
Maybe the only time we say it, but he is definitely the star of this footage that we watched this evening. So, Tawei number one, Sawa number two. I would say Dr. Death Steve Williams number three and Kawada number four, based on these, because I thought that must be like an all-time lifetime best performance from
Williams
or one of them. I thought like I was disappointed by quite a few of these Kawada matches as I've talked about. So
yeah.
that's my order.
Okay, I'll go Tawei number one, Kobashi number two. Probably Misawa number three, and then Kawada number four.
Okay, that's fair. All right, I can see that. Why is Kobashi above Misawa then?
well, I like the Kawada the Kawada singles matches better, and the Kobashi Tawei match I liked better than the Tawei Kawada match. I just thought Kobashi brought a lot, and you know, you undercut the Kawada Kobashi first match that I liked a lot better. So,
oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay, great. All right, and we don't do the overall rankings at this point, right?
We can do that whenever. I don't know. Okay. How many shows do we have? 18.
This is show number 10.
Well, we just smushed 10 and 11 together.
Yep.
So now we're down to 17. Let me see. Let's do it at the end of next show, because that brings us almost to the end of 95. And that will give us a good description there.
Okay, great. Well, join us then for the next All Japan Excite series. Just before I sign off here, Stephen, do you have any shows or anything coming up that you'd like to draw people's attention to?
Yeah, you know, every week, this week in wrestling, actually, not this week, I'm not going to be on it. I have Thanksgiving stuff to deal with, but Pete and Johnny will be there, and I'm sure they'll do a good job without me there. It'll probably be a lot more civil, so good for them. I had my Goldberg series on Place Divination start up. It's writing, but I'm going through all Goldberg's career. The first one covers his first month, September 97. I'm working on the October 97 one right now. I'm having a lot of trouble. Maybe Parv, you can help me. If a match is taped in October but doesn't air in December,
mm-hmm.
where would you put it in reviewing chronologically, in December when it airs or in October when it is taped?
I think I'd veer towards putting it on the air date if I was following the TV.
Okay.
It depends if you're following the TV or not.
Yeah. It's a tricky situation. I'm going to have to think about that. But yeah, I'm working on the Goldberg Who's Next? A look at Goldberg's career.
I think it says a lot about me and you, Stephen, that in the month that I produce my Fair to Flair four-part mini-series magnum opus love letter to Ric Flair, you start a series on Goldberg.
I will take a Goldberg four-minute squash over a Ric Flair hour draw most days.
So there it is. Join us next time for the All Japan Excite series.